for January 18th, 2018. This is the Superfly Oz podcast. I am he, Superfly Oz himself, Stan Fitchman. Welcome to the podcast. This podcast is where you can get trustworthy insight and perspective of what's happening throughout my home here in Hawaii, across the United States, and around the world. Of course, we're going to be talking about politics. Unfortunately, that's going to be more than enough for today's show. We're also going to dive into great topics such as possibly talking about your iPhone repair. Let's go into that a little bit. But first, welcome to the podcast, and let's talk about a little bit of the housekeeping items that I would like to let you know about regarding this program. If you are online and would like to listen to other episodes of the Superfly Oz podcast, you can go to www.politicshawaii.com. Politicshawaii.com is where you are going to find the Superfly Oz podcast program. You're going to find about 7 episodes prior to this one on there. If I can get a little bit more space and a little bit more time and a little bit more money, I'll be putting up more of the older shows that I put on for the Superfly Oz program since April of 2017. If you would like to reach out to Superfly Oz himself and talk to him directly, go ahead and email him at sjfhawaii@gmail.com. sjfhawaii@gmail.com is going to be the place where you're going to find Superfly Oz responding right back to you, probably within a day or so. And if you are interested in subscribing to the program, you can do it through the Podomatic site, but I would also encourage you to subscribe through the iTunes or Stitcher links for the Superfly Oz podcast program. Thank you so much to all of my listeners today for taking the time out and just allowing me to take a couple of days off from the show, from my usual Saturday broadcast, in order to kind of retrench and reevaluate exactly what is going on around the world because of events that landed here in the state of Hawaii on Saturday. So I very much appreciate your patience in regard to that. However, first, I do want to do a couple of other little announcements here in regard to the show, as well as to a couple of other things I experienced over the last couple of days. So first of all, if you've taken notice, I've also done a little bit of housekeeping items in regard to the show. I did a refreshed logo for this show moving forward. As you know, a few weeks back, I did a refreshed intro and outro song or music piece that was a little bit more edgy, a little bit more interesting for people to listen to when going to the podcast. So I actually also did that with the logo also and the icons for the show itself. So let me go into what actually happened to me before Saturday here in the state of Hawaii. So I wanted to let you know that if you had an iPhone 6 or later, and you've held on to that phone for about 2 years or so, like I did with mine, I have an iPhone 6S, then it might be beneficial for you to go to your Apple Store or make an appointment to go to your Apple Store and take advantage of the $29 battery replacement program that they have out now. Now, as you know, Apple was doing a little bit of funny stuff in regard to the new software updates for iPhones, especially for like iPhone 6, 6S, and a little bit older models, because they didn't want to destroy the battery by putting on some wackadoodle fancy pants program that would drain the battery even more. What actually did happen was that it was still damaging the battery, even though they were throttling down the program itself. I noticed the degradation quite quickly on my phone, and so I took it into the Apple Store and I made an appointment. And I was able to make one on Friday, which was actually quite rare because everybody wants to go on Friday after work. Took it in. 2 hours later, they gave me a brand new battery. And I'll tell you one thing right now. I have an iPhone 6S that is running as if it was a brand new phone. While my iPhone 6S is not the most fancy pants version of the phone, because there is the 7, there's the 8, and then there's the X that has just come out recently, I will tell you that for what I use my phone for, intricate texting to people, keeping in touch with everything through the news, making sure that I get alerts on time, right now my phone is acting just like all the others, quickly, efficiently, right to the time. So Again, if you're looking to upgrade your phone because you think it's slowing down and things are not working out all right on it, I will tell you right now that if you get your battery replaced on your iPhone 6S, you could probably extend the life of your phone by a year. And trust me, right now, with the way prices are for new iPhones and the rental fees that I would have to pay if I got a new iPhone, I would rather pay the $29 and get an extra year out of life on this phone than going off and paying even more for moderately more features on a newer phone. So at the 5 minute and 25 minute mark, I do want to dive right into the subject matter that is going to be the majority of the show today, and that is what happened on January 13th at 8:07 a.m. here in the state of Hawaii, and 38 minutes of uncertainty as to what was happening around the world. And let me read off a statement that I wrote out in regard to all of this just for your benefit. So on January 13th at 8:07 a.m., when the dangers and perceived dangers of the world landed in the hearts and minds of Hawaii residents, all through because of the press of a wrong button. So I'm going to quickly go through exactly what exactly happened, just in case you were living under a rock or not watching the news for the last few days. At 8:07 a.m., alerts went out onto cell phones throughout the state of Hawaii stating that there was a ballistic missile attack that was aimed toward Hawaii and to take shelter now. This caused a great amount of anxiety, a great amount of uncertainty, and a great amount of fear in the hearts and minds of the people of the state of Hawaii. Now, this was a statewide alert. This was not just focused on Oahu. This was not focused on one island. It was focused on the entire state. So everybody went at it as if this was real. And for 38 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, what we saw on our phones here in the state of Hawaii was what the reality was going on in the state of Hawaii. We were going to be attacked by a missile, most likely from North Korea. Most likely it was nuclear tipped. Most likely it was going to cause a great amount of damage, harm, and death, no matter where it landed in the state of Hawaii. People got very concerned. They started doing things to protect themselves. They put themselves into safe areas. Some people put their kids into manholes and sewer areas in order to protect themselves from the blast. And pretty much everybody had gotten to the point where they were very, very nervous about what possible realities there were coming at them. And in some cases, I'm pretty sure some people thought to themselves that what they just saw on their cell phones was their death warrant signed. Let's repeat that. People saw that and they said, I'm about to die in 20 minutes. So as you can tell, people were very, very, very concerned about a potential future in the next 20 minutes. While there were notices going out pretty much moments after the initial announcement of a ballistic missile attack coming to Hawaii and that it was not a drill, individuals such as Representative Tulsi Gabbard of the state of Hawaii started texting out and tweeting out to people saying that this was a drill and that this is a false alarm. This is a drill and this is a false alarm. However, the reach of that message never got out to everybody as quickly as it did when, in 38 minutes later, the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency sent out its all clear through text messages to all the phones in the state of Hawaii. So while there may have been words that were going out at that point saying that this was a drill, not everybody was getting it. And for 38 minutes, people really did think that we were under attack by a foreign force with a missile coming down on the state of Hawaii. So the bulletin went out that said, all clear. And then we start the questioning. What the hell just happened? People are shooken up. People are disturbed. People are crying. People are immensely upset about what just happened. And so, like I said, the first question that came out of everybody's mind was, what the heck just happened? Now, as I told a few friends of mine over in the mainland, there were more than enough people in this town, because we're a state of over 1 million people, that there were enough people that were kind of shrugging this off and saying, okay, you know, time to move on. But there's a lot of us, a lot of people, and a lot of people are still asking, what just happened? How did it happen that this announcement went out that was a false alarm? So immediately, the leadership principals of the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency, or HEMA for short, along with the governor, along with the Hawaii National Guard got together at Berkheimer Tunnel over at Diamond Head, which is where the headquarters of HEMA is, and tried to figure out just exactly what happened. 3 hours later, they had a press conference, and basically we were told that there was a button that was a test button, and then there was a button that was right next to it saying that was the real button, and the operator who was on a shift change pressed the real button instead of the test button. Now everybody is wondering, how the hell did that happen? How the heck did it happen where somebody sat there and pressed the wrong button? Is that person incompetent? Who's responsible for that button? And if it's the guy who was sitting there pressing that button during the shift change, I will guarantee you right now, people are having their pitchforks and their knives out, ready to tell this guy to go away from Hawaii, go somewhere else, you're out of here. Of course, the governor came online and said that he was sorry. Vern Miyagi, who is the director of Hawaii Emergency Management Agency, took responsibility for what had happened. And still, to this day, we are hearing back from other principals that are involved in this as to what exactly happened. And of course, now the federal government is now involved through the Federal Communications Commission to try and figure out how an alert like this got out so quickly and why it took so long for the alert cancellation to come through, which was 38 minutes. And it was at this point that I stopped analyzing the situation and said to myself, okay, I'm just going to watch what's happening here. Superfly, you're not going to go on a broadcast right now to hash out exactly what I just said in the last 5 minutes to you, because everybody is doing the same thing. I need to figure out what's really going on here and really what type of questions need to be asked. So I decided to delay the broadcast of the podcast in order for me to evaluate exactly what was going to be said over the next day or so. And so I decided to go ahead and let the news cycle wash out some of the stuff over the next couple of days. I learned this actually when I was working at Pacific Business News, and the reason why or how I learned how to do this was I was a reporter at the time when 9/11 happened. And I remember my editor telling me to get on the phone with people and start talking to them and asking them, well, what happens now and stuff like that. The event just happened a few hours ago. Nobody, and I mean nobody, is going to have a straight answer as to exactly what's happening. Everybody is going to collectively shrug their shoulders and say, well, I don't know what's going on. And I really didn't want to come online and just tell you, well, I really don't know what's going to happen next. Let's see what's going to happen in the news in the next few days. Delay the program for a couple of days, let the news cycle wash out, and then give you trustworthy analysis. And this is where the trustworthy analysis will come in at 12:55 in the show. So in starting the analysis, I had to go back and reopen up some old manuals of mine from my junior chamber days and take a look at a program that was put together by the Junior Chamber International, which is the international organization overseeing all junior chamber organizations throughout the world, all 200,000 members. A number of years ago, they came up with a new thought process in regard to how to solve problems in the world, and it's called the Active Citizen Framework. It's a multi-part process by which you go and figure out what you need to do, how we're going to figure out what we're going to need, what's the process by which we need to make those things happen, solve whatever little problem it is that's in within that issue, and then analyze the issue afterward and, you know, determine progress. The first part of the Active Citizen Framework is called the Needs Analysis. And this is actually the most important part of the Active Citizen Framework, because this is where you figure out what it is that we're really trying to tackle here. The analysis that is taking place in this part one of the Needs Analysis is the process to dig deeper and find the root cause of issues that have been discovered. And you do this by simply asking one question, and I'll read this off to you. Continue to ask why until you reach the root cause behind the problem. By formulating solutions that address the root causes of problems, you will be ensuring your project leads to sustainable impact and positive change for the community. Well, that's more for JCI stuff. The root cause is often hidden from plain sight. That is one of the key pieces about this. Let me repeat that. The root cause is often hidden from plain sight, but it is the duty of everybody who's analyzing this to actually go ahead and start asking the question why and find out what that root cause is. So one analysis of this root cause comes from Representative Tulsi Gabbard, who came online faster than boiling an egg and basically said that all of this is the fault of President Donald Trump, who has been bellicose and very, very belligerent toward Kim Jong-un over in North Korea. And Kim Jong-il himself is being as belligerent too to the United States and setting off rockets and making a whole bunch of things going on. But it's basically been on both sides. And in that analysis, I thought for a day, okay, that's where the root cause is. It doesn't have nothing to do with us. It has to do with Washington, D.C., and it has to do with Donald Trump. Well, last night, as I was thinking through this process a little bit more for the program today, I realized that's not the root cause, and I'm going to tell you why. The events and actions of the White House and Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un are external factors to the entire issue that just happened here in the state of Hawaii. Let me repeat that. We have no control over those external actions that take place outside of Hawaii regarding what happened in Hawaii here. We have no control over Donald Trump and his bellicosity toward North Korea. We have no control over what Kim Jong-un is doing over in North Korea and setting off rockets. So really, to try and say that the root cause is because it's Donald Trump and it's the president and it's the White House is really belying the fact that we have not reached the root cause. We are actually just throwing off onto somebody else an excuse as to the reason why things happened here in the state of Hawaii. So I had to go back and think about the root causes once again and think to myself, possibly, okay, who is really responsible? And then I added on to that question, who is responsible for the button? Let me repeat, who is responsible for that button there? And who is responsible for creating that button? And who is responsible for activating that button right there? Now, while I've been thinking about this, a number of people, a number of pundits have already come out and said, well, button boy, whoever that is, we don't even know who his name is, should be fired and because of incompetency or whatever. But I thought to myself, wait a minute, who is responsible for that button? Is it Button Boy himself? Here's my thought on that. The guy who came in on that shift change at 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturday is not responsible for that button, and this is the reason why. He comes in, he is just one of a number of people who sit there for 8 hours throughout the 24-hour period and make sure that whenever the word actually comes down that there's a missile attack or some sort of natural disaster coming about, he is the one that is responsible for pressing that button. Okay, we get that. However, I don't think he's the one who actually created that button or who created the program by which that button was there, because this is actually on a computer and you just do a mouse click as to, yes, send out the notice, yes, I'm sure of it, and then the alert goes out. This guy here who accidentally pressed that button was not the creator of that button. Yes, he pressed the wrong button, and perhaps that's going to be enough for him to be dismissed or at this point in time reassigned. However, who is the one who authorized the software that is on the computer to create the situation in which one button says test and one button says actual? And they're right next to each other, according to Vern Miyagi, who is the head of EMA. So then my thought process went back and said to myself, well, okay, why are we even here in the first place? Why do we even have a system by which we have a missile attack software on a computer by which there's a button that says, send out an alert that says, we're about to be attacked by a missile? For 25 years before November, or I believe maybe it was even October of last year, we didn't even have this software. We didn't even have this stuff going on. The Cold War was over. There was no missile attack. There was no threat of a missile attack. And then all of a sudden, now we're getting alerts about a missile attack here in the state of Hawaii. And I believe that this is the only state that actually does it. So I had to think to myself, okay, maybe it's not about the button. Maybe it's about the people who authorized that button to be created and developed and eventually be pressed by the lowly worker over at EMA who is on a shift change, who has probably really no responsibility whatsoever as to how that button was created. This led me back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fifth floor of the state capitol of the state of Hawaii. And that is where the governor's office is. Now, I thought to myself, okay, so now we're looking at the governor as being the wholly responsible person for this whole thing. And at the end of the day, if you're a Harry Truman Democrat who remembers what his placard said on the front of his desk at the White House, in which the buck stopped here, that's where the buck stops. However, I started asking again, why? And it led me down to this other road that basically said, who was the guy who was sitting across from the governor at his work desk, which is behind the ceremonial desk over at the state capitol, who sat there across from him and said, Governor, this is probably a good idea as to reestablishing the ballistic missile warning system for the state of Hawaii, and we start sending off alerts and alarms and whatever every single month, or at least testing them every single month to be sure that we are prepared and ready just in case North Korea decides to go really, really nuts and sends off a ballistic missile toward Hawaii. And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, we have hit now the root cause. Who is that guy that sat across from the governor? Because the governor just accepted the advice of somebody who he trusts and understands that this is a serious issue and that we should probably be taking this thing very seriously and finding out what do we need to do in order to establish this. The guy across from the governor is the one who said to the governor, we should do this. The governor said yes, because he trusted the guy. Who is that guy across the way? Is it Vern Miyagi? I get yes and I get no's from my sources in regard to it. Is it members of the legislature? I get some yeses and I get some noes. And I think that's the person, ladies and gentlemen, that if you're going to start a discussion on personnel changes at Hawaii EMA, that's the person across the desk from the governor that needs to be the first in line to go. Because he, or she for that matter, let's not be gender specific, is the one that came up with the idea in the first place and was able to, either through persuasion or just a bunch of flip charts or a good PowerPoint presentation to the governor, said that it might be a good idea to reestablish this system. This segues very nicely into a sentence that Lee Cataluna said yesterday in the Sunday Star Advertiser in her column regarding the whole situation. Now, in her column, she basically says that personnel changes need to be made, and they need to be made yesterday because of stuff like this that happened. But she understood also that this is not an issue that just started off on Saturday at 8:07 in the morning. She says, the seeds of yesterday's panic, or Saturday, excuse me, were sown months ago when the state decided to freak out everyone by dusting off the Cold War duck and cover routines and bringing back the attack warning sirens for the first time in decades, as though a few minutes of advance warning is going to save anyone's lives if Kim Jong-un volleys a flock of nukes our way. It's like they were trying to expand their product line beyond basic weather warnings. But preparing for a nuclear attack is very different from preparing for a hurricane. There's not much you can do but pour yourself a drink and say goodbye. Here's what she's really trying to say. She's trying to say that it's not that easy to just dust off old plans and put them into place as if it was like the weather service and all they needed to do was put on a new button onto the software that said warning for a hurricane, warning for a tsunami, warning for a ballistic missile attack. It's not the way that this should have been set up, and this is not the way it should have gone through in regard to how the process is to send out or test for a ballistic missile attack. So again, this goes back to the button. Who is responsible for the button? And I am going to tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, Superfly Oz is going to tell you right now, the person that's responsible for that button, the person that's responsible for putting that guy who pressed that button inadvertently into a little bit of danger because he's getting death threats too, is the guy that was sitting across from the governor, persuading the governor that it was a good idea to reestablish these Cold War warnings about ballistic missiles coming toward Hawaii. You find that guy. You figure out who that guy was, and you will find the person that you need to fire first. Nobody else. Is the guy who pressed the button should be fired? He should be reassigned, and he has been. But I am not going to go and board that carnival train that some pundits, some government officials as well as probably more people in this town than you know, are saying, I want the head of the governor, Button Boy, and Vern Miyagi, because that's the only people that were really responsible for this. Now that we have established the fact that what I'm saying is that the guy across the way from the governor is the one who's really responsible, and you should go find out who he is, either through hearings that are going to happen on Thursday here in the state of Hawaii, or even earlier on as people get back to work after Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. The governor also needs to take responsibility. However, I don't want to hear that the governor needs to take responsibility for creating that button, because he was the one who got advice from the person who was sitting across from him. And the governor used his greatest amount of judgment in order to make that happen. Have we all made judgmental mistakes? If you have not, then please email me at sjfhawaii@gmail.com and inform me how you are able to make perfect judgment 100% of the time in this world. Because I will guarantee you right now, I don't think I'm going to get any emails. The governor made a conscious decision to accept the advice of somebody. And yes, you have to admit that the advice might have been wrong in regard to not only creating of that button to create that test, but the entire test itself. Because really, to tell you the truth, the risk factor has been low. It was always going to be low. And the fact of the matter is that even if we didn't have a warning system in the state of Hawaii, we would be more than covered by the federal government, who tracks Kim Jong-un and all of his activities over in North Korea probably more closer than any parent does of their daughter or their son going to school every day. Their satellites are right over his country. And if the guy has a leaf drop off from a tree somewhere near his headquarters, U.S. PACOM and the guys over in the mainland know that leaf dropped. So trust me on this one. We were already covered. Now we just got to figure out who came up with the bright idea to tell the governor that the advice is to reestablish the system. And the governor said, yes, that's the guy that we really, really, really should be hearing from. And we really, really, really should probably have him maybe move away from advising the governor at this time. So at about the 27 minute and 20 mark, I do very much appreciate you taking time out to actually listen to this program and go through the thought process that I have had over the last couple of days in regard to this situation. Again, one of the things that I want to do on this podcast here is give you analysis and advice that you can really trust and really have the process laid out to you as to how that process should be, rather than jump onto everybody else's bandwagon and pretty much just start screaming and yelling and saying the same thing that everybody else is saying. This podcast, I really don't want to have that happen. I really do want it to be an alternative analysis in some cases, or a new analysis that you can take and you can think about and you can say, that actually makes more sense than what I'm hearing in the peanut galleries or wherever it is that the noise is coming from in regard to all this. And ladies and gentlemen, and if I can just conclude the program with this note, I think it's immensely important that as a listener to this program, you understand that there is more to analyzing an issue than just whatever is being presented to you on the television or what's presented to you on Facebook or presented to you in whatever format it is that information is given to you. This is where people should really come up with an idea of like sitting around a dining room table and actually thinking about these things face to face, man to man, woman to woman, child to parent, in regard to exactly what has happened here and what will be happening across the United States and around the world. Because really, to be honest with you, if all we are doing is standing in the middle of a sound chamber and yelling out the same thing to everybody else, and we're listening for that echo to come back, that's not helping anybody, anywhere, anytime, anything in regard to moving our society forward. So I want to just leave it to you on that point. I want to thank you so much for joining me on the podcast program today. I know it's, again, a little bit long, but I think that you appreciate the fact that these shows at this point in time need to be a little bit longer so that we can have at least a good analysis of what is really happening around Hawaii, around the United States, and around the world on the Superfly Oz podcast program, broadcast every Saturday, most times, from my nook here in the state of Hawaii, Makuhali area of Honolulu, United States of America.